Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 12, 2008, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. I'd like to start the meeting by recognizing Carrboro Town Manager Steve Stewart.
Thank you, Mayor Chilton. I just wanted to mention to the board we have some special guests in the audience tonight. We have some students from McDougal Middle School who are working with Wendell Rogers from our Rec and Parks Department involved in Town Hall Day for Teens, and they just had a session right before our meeting, and they're going to visit with us for a while tonight. More importantly, they're having their own board meeting on Monday, February 25th, starting at 7 o'clock. And Wendell wants me to make sure to invite you all. If you'd like to participate, come in the audience. You can sit on that side for a change and toss some of the tougher questions to our students. So we're really glad to have them involved here tonight, and I look forward to working with them on the 25th. So, Wendell, anything else I need to say? So thank you all again for coming.
Steve, can we refer part of tonight's agenda to them for that meeting?
That works for me.
Yeah, we can come and say, you know, my wife and I moved here 8 years ago to get away from this kind of development. All right. We'll look forward to it. I'll have to clear it with the family, but I'm looking forward to hopefully being here next Monday night for the board meeting, to watch the board meeting. All right. With that, we are on to our first item of the agenda, a work session on downtown parking. Is staff a presentation?
Yes. At the January 22nd public hearing on the Roberson Square CUP, the board had requested that you have a work session on downtown parking. This item serves to frame that discussion and would point out that items directly related to the Roberson Square project would be included as a part of the discussion on the 26th as part of the continuation of that public hearing. I'm sure there's some overlap between this discussion and that discussion. And Adina Messinger, our transportation planner, does have a presentation to get you all started with your discussion. So, Adina.
Thanks. Good evening. This is a very brief introduction to your work session. I'm just going to go over just a few things. I'll give you an update on where the parking study is. James Harris is going to share some information about a potential new public lot in the downtown area. And then I'm just going to highlight some possible discussion points which came out at your board retreat and also were highlighted in Patrick McDonough's email. So the parking study is underway. The students started their data collection this past weekend, and I believe that the supply is complete. And I'm looking at several of the students who are here tonight. They're here if you have any additional questions that they might be able to answer. They're in the middle of their demand counts. They've been doing that today. I think based on the weather, they're probably going to defer their last day of counting till Thursday. And that'll depend, again, on the weather. And it seems to be going pretty smoothly, and we're hopeful that we'll have some good tables and some good information. Jackie?
You count at night, too, right?
Yes, yeah. And so what they've done for the demand counts is they've kind of divided the downtown into different zones. And each of the different zones, they've looked at what are the peak hours that they would expect people to, you know, to be the busiest for those lots. Some lots they've counted four times throughout the day to get an idea of what it's looking like. Some lots, if the peak really looks like it's in the middle of the day, they've counted it once. But certainly in the Cat's Cradle area and sort of that part of downtown, they've been doing it in the middle of the day, the morning, the night, and later on in the evening.
And are they doing, like, Saturdays?
Yes.
And also, not on lots, because I know, like, along Roberson Street, that's...
Absolutely, yeah. So we've got, so they started on Saturday. They did a Saturday-Sunday count already. They're going to be, they did a Tuesday count today. They'll do another day. And then in addition to actual lots, we've identified a number of streets in the downtown area that they'll be looking at, certainly where you would expect to have overflow parking. So they're looking at that as well.
Okay. Can I just ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
And so they are some of the counts done, for example, and maybe I missed it, when Cat's Cradle or the Art Center are having...
Events.
Events?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Including the adjoining streets?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Just to make sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Another piece, as I think you know, is a downtown business survey, and a copy of the draft of that survey was in your packets. And essentially, really, if you all have any feedback on that, that would be great, either this evening or shortly after. You can let me know. I know the students want to get that finalized so that they can prepare it for distribution towards the end of this month. And this survey has gone to the ESC for review. We did receive several comments, and those changes have been incorporated into the survey that you have before you. And I think that piece has gone pretty well also.
We also had, and we had them at our place tonight, there was a series of emails that we received from businesses concerning parking. I know that's separate from the survey, but it might be informative for them to at least copies of. So do you have?
I don't have a copy, but I will get some.
There's like 11 of them, and Sarah could give them so that they could kind of be part of the comments section.
Absolutely, that sounds good.
Thanks.
And I just wanted to point out, I know that we had talked at your retreat about this idea of incorporating the proposed and newly approved developments for the downtown into the study, and that is going to be part of it. Staff will be meeting with several of the students, I think, next week to go over what those parking supply and demand numbers are and how that will be incorporated into their data collection of supply and demand. And that's basically the update for now. I think we're on a really good schedule and should have a presentation from the students in April on their results. And James is going to talk about this potential new downtown lot.
It's kind of hard to see, but you have a copy in your binder. We're constantly looking for parking in the downtown to help facilitate the need of the business people. And we've been looking at this particular property for about 6 to 8 months. It's located behind Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's a part of the Browning property. And the reason we want to share this with you is because most properties in Carbert, particularly this one, has some constraints on it. The water on this property flows to the northeast corner, and it's all the properties from Rigsby Henson, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Love Overboard. To construct this parking lot, we would have to spend at least between $100,000 to $200,000 just to meet our stormwater management requirements. That does not include the construction of the lot itself. So we're getting pretty tight downtown, but I wanted to share this with you. At most, this would give us 26 parking spaces. There's also another big constraint on this property, and it's a large tree.
Right here.
It's pretty big, and we would hope not to have to take it out if we move forward on this particular property. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Am I correct that translates to upwards of $10,000 a parking space?
That's correct, and it may behoove us to look at some alternatives.
That's the storm.
Yeah, it could be considerably more because, as James mentioned, that's the range for just the stormwater piece before we build the first lot, and this is based on potentially spending that kind of money on a leased lot. So something that ultimately the board's going to have to give a lot of thought to.
Is the lot unusable in its current condition?
It is. It's full of ruts, and it's just not organized, and it's unusable, and it's a lot of broken glass.
I hate to ask this question, but I might as well. Better know early than late. Would we, like, pave it, or would it be like the gravel lot off of Weaver Street?
More than likely like the Weaver Street lot.
Okay. Stormwater. Well,
thanks, James.
So are we expecting to have another report on this, and would like a more complete
we're gonna do some more work, but we just... Part of it was to show you all in the community that we're constantly looking, but the other thing is to point out how difficult and how expensive it is to try to do downtown parking because, you know, with the new stormwater regs, I mean, we've spent a tremendous amount of money just to really get started.
Well, let me. I had one question to follow up. Dan had said would you ballpark it at 10,000 approximately a spot, but at the, what I see here is it says 26 spaces.
26.
So that would be.
10 would just be getting started.
Right.
It would be getting started. That does not include the construction costs.
Yeah. Right.
And buying right-of-way to make sure we have adequate access to it, because right now the opening's only 17 feet. That cannot accommodate two-way traffic.
So I think, this I guess, provokes a couple of thoughts in my mind. Actually, before I go there, I should have pointed out earlier, Alderman John Herrera had work commitments tonight and could not join us, so he sent his regrets. He'll be reviewing this meeting by videotape. But on this, I think that, I don't know about, we can see about the merits of this particular parking lot idea, but I wanted to raise two kind of larger picture thoughts. One is that I think, as we discussed some at the retreat, I hope that we will continue to focus not merely on parking as the primary issue about getting to downtown, but on a sort of multimodal strategy that we would develop as a community that places it basically we would look at, yes, parking, but also at how does our public transportation system reach downtown? How does our sidewalk infrastructure and our bike lane infrastructure lead to downtown to connect our whole community together so that we're trying to take an approach which emphasizes several different methods of getting downtown, and hopefully that would gradually tend to emphasize the alternatives to single-occupant vehicles for the future. But the reality is that in the meantime, in the present day, and for the next several years, obviously driving downtown will be an important way of getting there for lots of people who live in the more rural and suburban areas of our community, and also for people who want to come to special events at night and that type of thing just for security reasons. So anyway, I wanted to just put that out there, that I think we do need to continue to look at this more in the context of what kind of investments are we going to make as a community in all the different modes of getting into our downtown, first of all. And second of all, I think I would like to throw out there the thought or idea that, all of the whichever modes of transportation we make investments in, it's partly about the benefits that all of us as a community get from the kind of economic growth and economic vitality of our total community. But it's also partly about the benefits that accrue to the existing businesses and also new businesses that locate in our downtown. And I think that at some point we need to have a conversation with the business community about how we share the burden as a community of the cost of making those investments. And I think that at least up to now, I haven't heard any good reason why we ought to pursue the kind of pay parking arrangements that Chapel Hill uses, or that Durham uses, or that Raleigh uses throughout their downtown. I think one of the things that makes downtown Carrboro economically competitive is that such parking as there is free, and I would like to continue to have that be free. In fact, I'd like to have there be no charge for any of the different modes that we get downtown: bus, bike, walk, park. But I think realistically, if we're gonna provide more parking that's being created by the government, and I mean anything more significantly than the kind of investments we've been making up to now, that has to partly be funded by our general property taxes, our general fund. But I think it also partly ought to be something that our downtown businesses are making an investment into as well.
I'm going to disagree in part. because one of the things I came into this meeting with a question about or a point on was under our summary from the retreat about the importance of free public parking, which Mark is bringing up again. And I think generally speaking, yes, we want free public parking, but I don't necessarily think that means we want it everywhere all the time. And I'll just give you one example that comes to mind for me, which is that we have fairly limited on-street parking. And if we were able to have on-street parking in front of retail shops and have meters with or whatever way of limiting parking there so that people could go in and out of those shops and do business more conveniently, then I don't know that that might not be a good part of a mix that might include longer free parking in lots that weren't as conveniently situated to those destinations.
Well, I think that's true, but I, on the other hand, just because parking is free in a location doesn't necessarily mean that it isn't time limited. So, you know, I'm not, and we would obviously have to explore how you go about that. But I think there are towns in North Carolina where they have parking meters and there's no charge for the meter. You just have to turn the knob, but then your parking is only valid there for an hour or however long the meter is set for. Uh-huh. I guess point being that can still serve a lot of those interests without necessarily having a charge associated with it. But I wanted to point out one more thing about the parking situation downtown, which is that there are at least two developments that are forthcoming at this point in our downtown in which parking decks are planned. I think there are two. And I think it's possible that at some point it may be appropriate for us to explore the possibility of collaborating with people who are already building private parking decks about the opportunities for somehow basically buying some space within those private parking decks make those spaces available to the general public. So I just throw that out there as another thought.
Well, having now worked in downtown Raleigh, having worked in downtown Durham, I can express to you the differences between the vibrancy of our downtown and the vibrancy of both of those, you know, seemingly larger, and you would think that there would be more vibrant economic downtown, and it's not. And one of the things is access and ease of parking. And I think the expectation is, you know, I don't want to, because I've been known to stay in a parking space too long and get a ticket, in various and sundry cities in North Carolina and other various states. And I think we need to be cognizant of the idea that one of the things that makes it vibrant, and it's an investment, I think, and I think we do need to extend some of the public parking. I'm not saying that everything should be free public parking, but I think we really need to be careful about, on-street parking, because some of that on-street parking may be in front of where somebody lives, and so that there has to be a balance. And, you know, some of it is, are we, you know, at what percentage do we want to be parking? Because some of the parking that is in downtown isn't accessible all the time for just free parking. I mean, there are certain places where the parking lots are large. If you're not going to those businesses, you can't use it. So, I would say we need to, again, always look for private parking. Public parking, because one thing that makes Carrboro vibrant is not this getting out. I mean, you know, I like Chapel Hill. But I don't go downtown Chapel Hill, not because I'm, you know, the homeless thing. It's a parking issue. And if you have, you know, small children, that's an issue. It's easier to go to some place that's free, get out with your children, go to the business, and come out. And we got to also look at the demographics, or if you're a senior citizen. Now, a lot of the senior citizens I know are really healthy, and they're still moving around, but there may be some that don't get around as well. And so we have to take those demographics into consideration as well.
Mm-hmm. Jack?
Just to back Joel up, I think every time you hear downtown Chapel Hill discussed, you hear the business owners down there loud and clear talking about parking and why can't parking be free, and parking mm-hmm. needs to be free. And every time they do a survey of why don't you come to downtown Chapel Hill, it's, well, the parking's free at the mall. And we certainly don't want to get into that. On the other hand, I've kind of casually mentioned to some business owners, well, if we want more parking and you want it to be free parking, how would you feel about a downtown district business tax to pay for it? And it's, oh my gosh, no. So that'll we have to work that through.
Well, and I think what I was trying to get at earlier, and I don't know if I was clear enough about it, is that I think, you know, that type of thing may ultimately be a part of the solution, but it should only be a part. That, in other words, we should recognize that it's not solely the downtown property owners and tenants' responsibility to pay, but that it's something that our entire community needs to strike some balance about, because, you know, our downtown parking benefits everybody in our mm-hmm. community. So, to varying degrees. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
I have a question about the question 16 on the survey. The phrase structured parking there, does that mean a parking structure, or does that mean?
Yes, and I think somebody else had that comment, too. I think we were going to put sort of parking deck in parentheses to clarify what that means.
You made the kids leave.
Go Mustangs.
They're just all bummed out, not really? Know where they're going to park
right.
next year.
When we finally get our license, there won't be any place to park.
It's middle school. 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah. Anyway,
all right.
Yeah, that's...
Parking deck, yes, that is what it means.
Yeah, that's what that means. Okay. We'll clarify that.
And I just scanned it, and just it's one of those days where I need my memory refreshed. Is there any talk or look at how far people will walk for a particular?
We didn't. I know that staff discussed that, and it seemed like that was the type of question which would sort of be more directed towards the customer mm-hmm. versus the business owner. The business owner can certainly give their impression of what they far they think people are walking, but we're also trying to keep it relatively short. So, mm-hmm. but it's still open.
I guess the alternative is to ask at least how far your employee's walking.
Sure.
Because then you at least know that there's this set of individuals, or how are they getting to work, and they work downtown. Are they biking? Are they walking? Are they taking the bus? Or are they driving? I think that question could be asked.
And also, where people are coming from would be helpful. I mean, obviously, the business owner doesn't know where every customer comes from.
Right.
But I think they have a sense of how much they're drawing people from out of town or in Carborough or whatnot.
You might be able to phrase it generally enough to get that mm-hmm. feel for the geographic distribution.
And the other piece I think is connected to what Joel is asking is I think the questions on, I guess it's like 5B where and 6B, where do they park now? I think that should have a specific, like where it says if they check private off-street lot, mm-hmm. it should say which one, where.
Okay.
And same thing with customers.
And then you could tell the difference, because you could do the distance between where they parked and
sure.
human. That would provide some information.
Okay.
Right, and that way if we find out that everyone's parking at Nathan's lot or at the Art Center lot, and, you know, we understand the implications of potential changes in those lots, that would help, you know, more specifically with planning, I think.
Adina, I was wondering, and I don't know if it belongs in this survey, if business owners or the employees would be receptive or interested in, van pooling from, let's say, the University Lake lot or Carborough Plaza, because I kind of, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the potential for that when so many of the new areas are redeveloped, but maybe this is a good place to get a feel for the viability of that.
Question 17 asks if they're interested in exploring park and ride opportunities for employees.
Right.
So it kind of gets at what you were asking. We can think about.
I'm wondering how far they'd be willing. What is their interest, and how far would they be willing? What's within the realm of possibility? And that's why I think being specific to maybe University Lake or, you know what I'm saying, because they have significant lots.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Thanks very much.
Sure.
I think this will provide us with a lot of good information.
Thank you.
And it'll be hard to kind of move forward with some other things until we get this. So it'll be be interesting to get.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to item 2 on our agenda, which is a.
Really clear.
What
time is the game?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not the game.
Is Carolina
the
playing
game
tonight?
Yeah, but Obama's playing Hillary, so that's
even more exciting. 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Can we all get home by 8?
No.
We'll make the halftime. All right. Yeah, I don't know. Work session on recommendations from Northern Study Area Plan Implementation Review Committee.
Okay. On December the 11th of last year, the Northern Study Area Plan Implementation Review Committee voted on a series of recommendations and requested that those recommendations be forwarded to the board for your review. A resolution that provides an opportunity for the board to specify follow-up actions is provided, and Trish McGuire, our planning administrator, is at the podium to give you all an overview of NSEPERC's work. Trish?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Steve. I just have a few introductory remarks, since this is really a work session for you guys to ask us, tell the committee, respond to what they've put in front of you, to ask us questions, tell us things, et cetera. This committee was formed last March, March 6th in 2007, and they did work through the spring, summer, fall, and early winter to review the implementation of the Northern Study Area Plan and make recommendations on that plan's implementation. And there were recommendations formulated for your consideration on December 11th, with the committee voting to forward them to you for review before any other steps were taken with regard to their work. So a couple of highlights of their work. There were two community forums held in 2007, one on April 21st and another one on June 16th. The first forum was really a presentation on the plan itself and on the implementation of that plan to date. There were also facilitated discussions during that meeting at which the citizens who participated were asked to identify a variety of things that they felt were working or not working, and to give that feedback to the committee so that they could then take those comments into consideration as well as their own evaluation of what had been accomplished. The data collection rather did include, as I said, facilitated discussions. There was also a land use pattern survey that was carried out at the second community forum, and group mapping of preferred land use patterns for the Northern Study Area. And the committee did also spend some time working on preparing a values statement with the expectation that they would revisit that document after they got on to developing an implementation strategy for your consideration and for theirs. The recommendations are summarized here. There were 13 elements that are in the document you all have received, with some attachments, which, and I should note for everyone's, for everyone, that the packet, the recommendation packet that you have, does consist of a document that is the recommendations of the committee from December 11th, with votes on nearly each of the elements individually, as well as the two supporting documents that were used to kind of develop that piece that was formulated as the recommendations. And the story about behind that is there were two kind of, there were actually probably four different proposals developed by various committee members during the course of the summer and early fall. And then those sort of formed into two separate proposals. And then while the committee was working, getting through, deciding what kind of action to take, they set up a subcommittee to formulate a proposal that sort of merged the comments or took these various things into consideration. But the vote that you, that document that you have, did request that you all receive both the recommendations piece itself as well as the two supporting documents that that were used to create it. So these elements include a series of things. Targeted rezoning for new commercial and or village mixed use on several parcels of land in the northern study area, and then more specific description of one property and the particular types of commercial development, mixed use development that might be desirable for the community. There is also a proposal for smaller scale mixed use projects, so a rezoning mechanism or something like that that would result in the opportunity for smaller scale mixed use developments along arterial roads throughout the northern study area. Revisions to our existing regulations dealing with village mixed use, but also streamlining our permitting and changing the structure of our ordinance by preparing a form-based code for development either within the Northern Study Area or throughout the community as a whole as some options that are presented to you. Codifying the protection of lands within the Upper Bowling Creek Conservation Map, working with the Greenways Commission to fully integrate a linear park along Bowling Creek, so that's in the Northern Study Area, with neighborhoods and other sites. Enhancing stream and environmentally sensitive area protection. These are changes to our land use ordinance. Requiring compact development. Reviewing the plan every 3 years to coincide with reevaluation. This is a separate issue. Recommending that the form-based code be the next step, development of a form-based code be the next step, and included within that, looking carefully at and promoting the redevelopment of commercial areas that are adjacent to or near the Northern Study Area, such as Carborough Plaza. And finally, working with the NCDOT to develop a profile, that is a desired cross-section, street cross-section, for Homestead Road and Eubanks Road and portions of old NC 86. And we have provided for you a resolution that provides an opportunity, really, for you guys to tell us what you would like us to do next, identifying elements within the committee's recommendations that you'd like us to work on further, specifying how the committee's work, how you'd like their work to continue, or something else as you direct us. I'm happy to try and answer any questions. James Carnahan is here, who was a member, and Amy Giraliman, who are both members of the review committee. Jay Bryan, who's the chair, has indicated that he would be arriving at the meeting, but he might have been on a slight. Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. Jim Rabinowitz is also here. I'm sorry. Oh, Tom's here too. I'm sorry. Tom, hi. And Jim Rabinowitz, also members of the committee, are here. Sorry about that. I didn't look far enough back beyond these bright lights.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're happy to try and answer questions that perhaps you have some for the members of the committee as well. Thanks.
I have some questions. What is a profile for Homestead and Eubanks Road, item number 13?
That would be a desired street cross-section. So it would look, it would say how many lanes, how wide the lanes, whether there were bike lanes included,
sidewalks,
whether it's curb and gutter or whether it's swales.
Center turn lane, raised median.
Medians. Yeah, a menu of choices, but what the street would look like, yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
And I have a question for Tom High. Tom, you seem to have gotten yourself in with this unsavory group of naysayers on the first few items, and I'd be interested in hearing your comment on if you don't mind coming up and
share. We just had
you need to come up so people can hear you.
We want to capture your thoughts forever.
Make it public record. So in 50 years when somebody's looking at it, they'll say, we should have killed him earlier.
The gist of it was that we had, in this process, we had the two main separate plans that were put forth by various members of the community or the committee. And then we had the attempt by some members of the committee to put together what they were hoping would be a consensus plan, which is a consolidation of the two plans. And then my recommendation was that we adopt the consensus plan. And many of the no's that I cast came from not necessarily wanting the two other plans to be part of what you were presented. Not that they couldn't be submitted as appendices or whatever, but that's where a lot of my no's came
from. So you were hoping to see the consensus idea. What was the hope for consensus move forward?
Right, that was what I wanted the main thrust of the committee.
Okay. He was refusing not to have a consensus.
So you failed to come to consensus because there was no consensus.
There was other political stuff that was going on within the committee itself.
Yeah, we don't want to know about
that. Yeah, that's why I didn't.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Well, you know, not to comment about the report and looking at it, because
is this for me or?
No, for the board. I'm sorry. You know, I only pick on you when I get an opportunity. But I'll get back to you, Lynn. One of the problems in that thing, and it goes to the advisory board issue, but, you know, I had mentioned earlier when I said when we got this report that I had some trouble if people didn't understand what the rules were and what the product was going to be at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there ought to be an expectation at the very beginning of how, for any other committee that we have in the future, even if the committee does additional work, there ought to be some expectation that is it going to be consensus? Is it going to be majority vote? And if the majority loses or the minority vote is, how is that going to be presented to the board? In what useful form is it going to be presented to the board? And, you know, I've had problems with that for quite some time. And, you know, I've been on the losing side and I've been on the winning side for some whatever changes intend to occur on in this part of Carrboro. But, again, in order for the product to be something that we could use and we can rely on, I think in the future, the board needs to set some expectations and ensure that the people that are on the committee, those expectations are met. So one, it won't be frustrating because you have volunteers who served a lot of time, which I thank you for. They could have been with their families. They could have been watching the basketball game. I'll say no more. But the next time we have a committee, we better have some black and white, everybody can understand what the expectation is. So at the end of the day, even if you have a minority view, we are not going to suck up the volunteers' time, then you have to do that minority view by yourself. But when not everybody understands the expectation, this is what we get. When we don't tell people clearly what we expect. I'm done on that issue.
I was just going to thank the folks who were here who participated. I know it was a long, arduous task, and I really appreciate it. And I appreciated the thoughtfulness of the recommendations on whatever side they came down. I do also want to point out that the environmental recommendations seem to be agreed upon by everyone, which I was very pleased to see. And it seemed that, you know, we could look at this and basically break it down to the areas where, you know, folks tended to have disagreement had to do with zoning and codifying and you know, and even some of the suggestions about expectations for, I want to say, architectural compliance with the rest of the town. But it, but I was very pleased to see that the environmental was consistent all the way through and supported.
Trish, how long would it take to develop a form-based zone?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It would take a little bit of time because usually they do involve. I mean, I think it would
maybe
take
maybe another year. Or
yes,
something.
I would think so.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll bite. What is it?
What's the hell?
Yeah.
And how does it streamline? How would it streamline the process?
Well, one thing that it it is a tight. It is an approach to zoning that lays out the basically the appearance of a place, and so there would be included within it streetscapes like the profile for Homestead Road and the other streets and roads in the Northern Study Area, as well as the form of the buildings along those streets. And so it creates sort of a hierarchy. Typically, it has an approach that creates sort of a hierarchy from intensive to less intensive. And if you were just use our the example of what we have in Carborough now, if you're on Main Street where the Century Center is, you know, you get sort of a little peak of higher intensity commercial, and then as we go out, that goes down. And if you think about the roof lines along Cliffs, you know, where Cliffs Meat Market is, and the Clean Machine, then you move out from there. You know, we move from sort of masonry buildings to buildings that don't have masonry, aren't built of bricks and so you see a change in the form of the streetscape, both across the street, you know, sort of a cross section of the street, as well as along the streets. And so you're basically designing what you want your community to look like. And so rather than approaching land use regulations from the perspective that you're saying, here's where we're going to have the retail, here's where we're going to have the offices, and here we're going to have the residential, you create a street, you know, you create a form for the community, and then you're not as concerned with what happens in those spaces. Now, some uses are more appropriate in certain types of spaces than others, and so there is still that connection made, but it isn't the dominant approach. And you know, currently our approach is really very much hangs around the table of permissible uses and the zones, and so we really are very much based on the uses.
And then doesn't it also in some of it is size, though, because
yes,
the closer
is.
You're in the town, you've got your R2, your R7.5, your R10, your R15, and as you go out to the northern transition area, you have your R20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and
RR. And so.
So the timing piece, so that's sort of what one is if that sort of gives you an idea. Mm. And then the, you know, the timing piece of it is usually this is the process does involve the community in deciding what is an acceptable form to them. And so it's sort of like upfront designing. And so the time we spend now sorting through the details of the way a project might look, those things are done more upfront. That's sort of in a nutshell.
I want to jump in for a second here and say, you know, I think it was a very interesting committee to serve on and to be a part of, and I enjoyed the conversations we had. I think, I want to point out, there's a lot within this report or whatever this is called, proposal, recommendation that there was close to uniform agreement on, but there were a few things where I think there was some real contention, and I want to highlight a couple of these as real specific issues.
And,
the way this resolution, that's potential resolution that's before us, is worded, it's suggested that we, that we identify what parts or all of it that we want to ask the staff to work on. So specifically, I want to start at the end and work backwards. Number 12. It says
Buck, I'm going to interrupt you if you don't mind, because, I mean, I disagree with that goal for tonight, and I'm going to make the same point I made when this was on the retreat agenda. I don't think we should be making decisions on these items until we've had a chance to hear from the public.
Well, that's fine, but I want to have my say about a couple of specific items on here, and B, I think
all we're asking, well, depends on what resolution we pass, but from my point of view, what we would be asking the staff to do would be to give us some formal reaction to that, and that when that formal reaction came back would be the point where, I'm not saying we would decide that we're doing any of this tonight, but that we would ask
the
staff.
Or that we're not doing any of it.
Let me have my say, and then you can see what you think about that. But specifically, for example, number 12, and I objected to this at the committee, and the committee agreed to water it down, and so I voted for it in the end. But I really think it should just be dropped altogether out of this stage of things. I'm not saying never do this, but I'm saying this stage is a little early for this. It says number 12, recommend as the next step that the Board of Aldermen examine enacting the VMU form-based code townwide, as well as promoting redevelopment within commercial areas bordering the northern study area, such as Carborough Plaza. Well, let me just say, I would rather see how this works on a more limited scale than that to begin with, and I don't really, to whatever extent we forward these recommendations to the staff, I really do not want the staff to spend its time on the notion of an entire townwide application of the notion of form-based code. It's not that I'm against form-based code at all, but I'm saying, well, let's just bite off a little bit smaller piece than that to start with, number one. Then under number two on here, it says, create mechanisms to allow smaller-scale, mixed-use, new urbanist, form-based projects to happen along arterial roads in the northern study area. And this was a really key point of contention on the committee. The majority of the committee certainly supported that point of view. But one of the key areas of discussion throughout the whole time that the committee was deliberating was this notion of whether the mixed-use type developments we would like to see in the future should be at certain specific locations that we might very explicitly identify, such as the three that are identified in paragraph one just above, or whether it should be that, and also allowing a variety of scales of mixed-use type development along various major transportation corridors through the whole area. So, for example, would there be the possibility of mixed-use developments of different types all along? I don't want to overstate it, but in various places along Rogers Road, Old 86, Homestead Road, and Eubanks Road, or would we be more oriented toward something more like the three specific sites that are outlined in paragraph one? And I felt the whole time, and I still feel very strongly, that we ought to be focused on certain specific nodes, that we do not need to rush into the notion that we're going to have mixed use type developments proliferate all along these transportation corridors. My feeling comes from the notion that I think if we have certain specific nodes where denser, more mixed-use type development happens, that those are that we then create public transportation nodes. We create areas that are easily served by public transportation with relatively few stops. And we grant a high degree of, I think, a higher degree of certainty to people who live along those transportation corridors about what they can expect to see in the future. That if you're right next to, say, the Hogan Tract on Homestead Road mentioned in paragraph 1A, that you can expect to see some type of mixed use there. But if you are elsewhere along Old 86 somewhere, or somewhere along Rogers Road, you can expect for the foreseeable future that we are not going to have that type of mixed use. And I really feel very strongly that creating a more certain environment like that would really help us avoid some of the really contentious aspects of Windmore, that part of the part of the issue with Winmore was not the sort of what Winmore is. It wasn't so much an issue of what they're actually building at Winmore as it was the kind of feeling that it dropped out of the sky on people, that nobody had any notice that this was coming, you know, that nobody expected to see a large mixed-use development crop up in the middle of Homestead Road.
That's what floating zones do, right?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to disagree with you there, but you keep going. I'm not going to interrupt you.
Well,
Mark, I do want to ask a clarifying question.
Wait, it's my turn. It's my turn. I had my hand up.
Can I not clarify his point he just made?
Well, let me give my final major concern that I have with the way that these 13 points are written, and then we'll go to Joel. The final thing is under number six. It says streamline the permitting process for commercial and VMU developments by preparing and enacting form-based code for the entire Northern Study Area. And this really, all I'm trying to get back to is the sort of interaction between the way that paragraphs 2 and paragraph 6 are written. You know, I don't really have major issues with the things that are included within paragraph 6, but it's a phrase like, for the entire Northern Study Area that gives me some pause, which seems to suggest that we might have this type of mixed-use type development proliferate throughout the entire Northern Study Area, when I think basically that argument that I was making before, that I think I would prefer to see it focused on specific nodes. And so I have a problem just with the aspects of paragraph 6 that say, for the entire Northern Study Area. One thing that is not incorporated in here at all, but that I heard a lot of that I talked about a good bit, that I heard some support from the committee members for, and that I heard lots of support for at the public meetings that we had on through this process, the two community charrettes that we held at McDougall School, was the notion that that it might make sense to set aside a portion of the Northern Study Area for a period of time to say, let's downzone a significant area for a specific period of time, 10, 15 years. Is there a problem that for a period of years, a portion of the Northern Study Area might be set aside and have developments such as they happen to be focused in other areas? And the specific suggestion that I had put forward and that others had talked about was this notion that the area on the west side of Old 86 is an area that is not currently served with public sewers and is fairly low density type of development that's in that area right now, and that those areas on the west side of Old 86 should perhaps be downzoned to a lower density zoning that would essentially tend to exclude sewer lines for a period of time, so that we might have the opportunity later on to make wise planning decisions, to come back, in other words, and make and consider what have we done well and what have we done not so well, just as we're doing now from the Northern Study Area, to go through that type of process in the future again. The point being to ensure that there's some area for us to come back to and have to reconsider. We know that when sewer lines enter into an area within the urban services boundary, that low-density residential housing, or at the very least residential zoning, residential land use, exclusively residential land use, seems to invade those areas rapidly because there's a very strong market for those land uses. Well, if we allow sewer lines to go underneath Old 86 without a specific plan for what extent of commercial uses we might have on the other side of Old 86, to what extent we might have school sites on the west side of Old 86, that sort of thing, then what we're going to do is we're going to end up building out the whole northern area of Carrboro in, you know, half-acre and one-acre lots for residential use only in a very rapid way. Now, I'm not saying that downzoning the west side of Old 86 is the only way to prevent that from happening, but I'm saying I think it would be a good way, because I think it would be a way that would ensure that 10 or 15 years from now, the folks who sit on this board of aldermen will have the opportunity to say, hey, there's still something left here to plan. There's still an opportunity to learn from what we've done in the past and to define and build a possibly somewhat different future than anything any of us have imagined for the town of Carrboro, without having to look at things like moving the urban services boundary or decreasing the size of the rural buffer or that type of thing.
Well, I just want to respond to one, since I was one of the people that voted on both in two boards, both the WASA and on the board in Carrboro, to accept the urban service boundary. I'm pretty comfortable with thinking that the urban service boundary is not going to change for the next 20 years for a number of reasons, which I will get into right now. We have a limited supply of water. Even in 20 years when the quarry comes along, that is a limited supply of water. That's the first thing. The second thing, problem is that since I've been living in Orange County, there has been no effort to either eradicate the watershed or to reduce the rural buffer. So before we agree to downzone any area that we have zoning jurisdiction, I want to have a discussion with those landowners, and I want to have a discussion with the entire community. Is that the best way to do it? Because it may not be, because what I have seen, having moved to Carrboro in 1992, I've lived two places. I lived on Fidelity Street, in the Fidelity Street apartments, apartment 39A, and I've lived at 107 Creek View Circle. I remember a time when there was no McDougal, when there was no Carrboro High School, when there was no Hogan Farms. And for some of you who were on the board, you will need to recall the bitter fight that people had about the placement of Hogan Farms. People have a total forgetfulness.
Oh, there's some that have not forgotten that one.
There's, you know, I would hazard to guess that it was bad for some people's health, that particular fight and that particular discussion. So I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with the mayor with regards to Winmore. That's a whole different issue, because the people that were complaining about Winmore, people were complaining about the houses that they're living in now, and that is the truth, and we can pull out the public record, and people who've been on planning staff for 20 years or more, like Roy and Trish, could tell you that. Read the notes. So right now what we have is a lot of R20 out there, and the question is, can we really sustain R20 with the resources we have? That's the real issue. You know, we got a park in an area that was, people complain about, the last place that was flat that could have had some reasonable office space, but people didn't want it. Because the deal for the original VMU was made because there were some county commissioners that didn't want any development out there. So we need to be clear about that as well. So before we talk about downzoning anything, we need to study that carefully. Because the big rush is to put houses near those schools. That's the big rush.
Right.
Nobody wants to talk about that. But that's the primary reason you see all this residential. Because the county purchased, without consulting, which is their right, anybody on this town board, and then we found out about it later. And that's part of the push for all the residential that you see in and around elementary school number 10, now Morris Grove, and whatever they will name the middle school. So those factors aren't really included in this document, but they exist. And they are the gorilla elephant in the door, quietly sitting on the left side. That's the first thing. When you see the area you see now, you see less diversity. And the question is, how are you going to produce that diversity, both commercial and residential?
So despite my earlier objection, I actually pretty much agree with Mark's points. I do want to make a few comments. One is that, you know, this idea that we're going to do something that's going to last for 15 or 20 years, I mean, we need to remember, as the residents of Rogers Road have learned, that we can't do anything to even encumber ourselves, to say nothing of the board that's going to sit here 2 years from now.
Right.
I mean, we can create an intention, and that'll have some impact, hopefully, but, you know, who knows? The point I was going to make in regard to number two is I agree we shouldn't create mechanisms, but we need to bear in mind that there is a mechanism which is called applying for rezoning that any property owner can do any time, I believe. But in terms of Mark's broader point about the west side and perhaps even other sections of the northern study area, but certainly that west side of 86, I mean, we had this question over and over again in the campaign, as Lydia and Joel will recall, and, you know, my kind of stock answer on those questionnaires was, it took us 100 years to grow to this point, and, you know, we've got a boundary established, and we can take some time growing out there and learn to do things right, give ourselves a chance to do some things right, do some things wrong, and learn in the coming years. Pretty much the point Mark is making, and I agree with him and with myself in that regard. In terms of the schools, you know, I had this conversation with James Carnahan last spring where, to me, we were talking about the same about the schools. Well, should there be residential density near the schools because the schools are there? And my feeling was, well, those schools were built, the elementary school that's going up now, that's built to serve the existing population. You know, it's not so that, oh, you know, there can be, you know, another 300 elementary school kids across the street, and we're better off, again, as Mark's suggesting, looking at zoning that's going to put any higher residential density closer to where there might be a new school site. And I think in particular under 1C where we have that Zinn property, where I guess if they, I don't know if they own that property or just proposing to develop it. But again, that's, you know, I don't think what I want to see there is a token, and hopefully none of us do, a token amount of commercial that's then going to justify a large amount of residential that will be sold as across the street from the schools. And finally, as long as we're looking at things to knock off here, I want to look at number 11 because, you know, I'm a believer in, well, you do something and then you schedule like one review at a certain point. But this idea of every 3 years is like, to me, presumes some knowledge of how things change over time that I don't think we have. And I don't get how it, what the tie-in to tax reevaluations is. I don't know if, Mark, you want to explain that. Or
I think it was just a concern overall about how various possible rezonings in the northern area might affect people's tax values. In other words, it wasn't anybody's desire to sort of force anybody out of their home by having it rezoned and the tax value going up. So the notion of reviewing it in conjunction with tax revaluations was just to say, to make sure that we're not sort of unintentionally kind of destroying somebody's
money. Let me ask you further then. I mean, you didn't include that in your list of superfluous items, but I mean, I guess, you know, until we see what we're going to do, I don't feel like we know when we need to review it.
Well, I'm the very opposite. If you don't set a regular time to review anything, then you may go too long, and then you have a problem. I think part of government's problem is we don't assess how we're doing on a regular basis, and then you don't know how you're doing. That's just like saying I'm not going to put oil in my car and we'll see how it goes for the next 4 or 5 years. To me. I mean, no, I'm serious. I'm as serious as a heart attack. But, you know, I think there needs to be some assessment, some sort of look, even if it's just a page or two, but to just sort of wait and see how it develops. I mean, we reassess, to me, almost on an annual basis what's happening in downtown. So why would we not apply the same standard, the same type of scrutiny in an area that is the last part of Carrboro? And we either make some decisions and be able to look back and say, I'm not saying 6 months or a year, but there needs to be some regular assessment of what's going on and what's there.
Well, I think we don't have to decide tonight exactly how often we would look at it, but I think that's part of the reason I voted for paragraph 11 is not so much that I feel that 3 years is the right time frame, but whatever. But it makes sense to say, and I think it's central to what I was saying about zoning, downzoning the west side of Old 86, that what I'm saying is there would definitely be, you know, You can, Mr. Attorney, you correct me if I'm wrong about this, but you can adopt a zoning district that says this area is zoned this way through the following date, and after that, this zoning expires here. So you can say, well, it's downzoned for until the rock quarry becomes a part of our water supply, or you know, whatever. Anyway, but I think some type of review at some point is certainly appropriate.
I was very interested in attachment F11, which has Jay's name and your name on it, as kind of a synopsis of the original recommendations with a little bit of tweaking. Do you care to speak to that at all? Because it actually meets my concerns, and it's real clear, easy to understand. I think it incorporates...
What page are you looking at?
F11. Hand-numbered F11 at the top.
Proposal from Jay, incorporating some stuff from Mark and kind of tweaking the original proposal. It's real clear. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think all these different documents are... There's a lot of different documents here that are supplied with this... And I pity any of you who've read every last one of them. I had at points made arguments for some of the issues I was talking about a little bit earlier, and made those points verbally. And Jay drafted this item at F11 through F14. Which attempted to kind of encapsulate a lot of those ideas and also insert some of Jay's own. And I would say, you know, I think that on the whole, what you see on F11 through F14 there, Jay's proposal, mostly is an effort to I don't know whether he'd agree with this or not, but my impression of it is it's an effort to take the Northern Study Area plan that we had from before, that we had from 10 years ago, and specify some certain sites, those same three sites we were talking about earlier, as being the places where VMU would happen or could happen, and then say that... we're not going to make all that, we're not going to tinker with all that much else besides doing away with the floating zone and saying, okay, the floating zone hereby lands, and it lands in these three different locations.
Why only three different locations?
Well, those three locations, I think, those were based mostly on maps supplied to us by the staff as being... three of the most potentially suitable from a physical constraints point of view.
Is that the case?
Well, it's a combination of looking at where there's available land and There was a mapping exercise that was held as the second community forum. So it was looking at the available land and kind of taking into consideration. You know, the maps were created by folks at the community forum. We showed the community where tracts of land were undeveloped or underdeveloped, you know, with very little stuff going on. So that was a kind of a meshing of those two things.
And we looked at wetlands and
yes, there were natural constraints included in the mapping information. Yes.
And I think if I recall, in all fairness, we should point out that I think, if I recall correctly, there's at least one site on the west side of Old 86 that's not on this list here that is, from just a physical point of view, fairly suitable to a fairly intense type of development.
I think you should include it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you why you should include it, because if the majority of the board rules and down zones west of Old 86, and I'm not going to encourage you to do so, you're going to find the same development you have across the street from McDougal. Large tracts, and I mean that's partially in the watershed, but you will find large mm-hmm. tracts with big houses, and they will more than likely have sewer.
That's exactly.
And so while, you know, I think we kind of need to be a little more realistic and set that if that's the only spot on the west side, it should be set at the same time too, so people have an expectation of knowing what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all in agreement for setting an expectation so people will not
right.
feel like they, you know, something dropped out of the sky, although, you know, I disagree with that contention. But
whether that happened before or not,
right.
we don't want it to happen to anybody.
To happen again. And my suggestion, if that's the only clear place and the only suitable place and it's really no disagreement that it's not the clear place, then it ought to be set.
And let me say, you know, I'm articulating this idea that I have about the west side of Old 86 in terms of, I'm saying, well, we should do down zoning. Well, I don't know what, I'm not, I don't really mean to say that I know that that's the right tool.
Mm-hmm.
I was really trying to get more at what my objective for a period of time would be there. And I think, you know, I don't want, yeah, it's not, the point of it is not to have, you know, five more Winsome Lanes over there. I mean, Winsome Lane's beautiful and it's appropriate for the watershed, but it's not what, you know, I want to have the opportunity
right.
to redevelop later on, and if it all is built out the way that Winsome Lane is built out, well, then there's not really much opportunity to even consider
and I
redevelopment
guess
later.
That would be my point.
I agree with you on that, certainly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have comments to make about quite a bit of this, but one comment I want to make right now is that I do like targeting and identifying the specific tracts that were encouraging the commercial. And I think that certainly these three are the tracts that are listed here are three that we should include, but I'd like to see a list of or a map of somewhat like we did in the forum of what other tracts could be included, because I think that notice as to what's going to be potentially coming on all these tracts out in the northern study area is really important. So I think I like the identification of these tracts, if we end up not going with some general, let's allow smaller scale projects to happen just along the roads, I'd like for us still to identify other areas where it could happen, specific tracts where it could happen.
What, board members, how would you feel about, I mean, it would be a little different than our usual methodology, but this is obviously a big major decision or a bunch of major decisions that we have to make. Would it make sense to, without necessarily even referring this to staff for the staff to study, would it make sense to, you know, hold like some type of public hearing or public forum of some kind to invite, because, you know, we're here. There are some interested people who've been like shaking or nodding at different points in our discussion, who I know would want to comment to us on it. And undoubtedly, there must be lots of other people who aren't in this room who would like have some comments about this. Would it be more helpful before we decided what parts of this we wanted to refer to the staff to have some type of public hearing or that type of thing?
But I'm just, the only thing I'd say about that is, you know, at some point, you know me, we have to make the decision. That's what we were elected for.
Sure.
And I don't have a problem having public input. But you need to set what the appropriate expectation is when right. people have public input.
Right.
Don't, you know, if there are some people that have strong opposition to any commercial, then we need to decide. If we're going to accept that public input, what are we going to do with it? Because I don't think we should set false expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I very much want public input. I think this is, it's so much work. It was so much work to put together, and I really thank the committee. I went to the forums and took a little bit of part in it, but it's a huge amount of work. I still kind of really like the Brian proposal, and I think hearing from the general public and getting their reviews on it will help me to kind of put some reality to what folks want. So this is going to take a while. That's the
Mark. I wanted to. I had a question. First of all, regarding public input, I think that if we chunk it and are very specific about which part is going to be discussed at which time, that may help frame the conversation. So that would be one recommendation I would make. So that way we'd be able to process it together with the public, and they'd be focused when they come. So we're not all over the map, literally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one suggestion. But I had a question on, because, and maybe you can clarify, you're on the committee, on F14 and 15, and I just want to be clear about the recommendation that Jay made, and I assume that this is something that was incorporated with your proposal on both. Well,
that's the same.
It's the same page. Okay.
Which page?
So page F14,
yeah.
Letters D and E include Carolina North and PH Craig as following specific form-based rezonings. So I just wanted to know.
Well,
why you included those there?
This proposal was written by Jay Bryan rather than by me.
Oh,
and not the committee.
And really by Jay Bryan only.
Okay.
Just to be clear,
okay.
I think he specifically mentioned those two because
They are in the NSA.
Yeah,
Right.
I mean that is sort of part of. I think committee members, you correct me if you think I'm wrong about this, but I think Jay was trying to, kind of extend an olive branch toward the idea that maybe this concept would be applied in more places than just these couple of nodes that we had talked about was basically the idea.
Actually, what I'm interested in is 11 through 13. I think, F11 through 14. I think 14's interesting.
Yeah, 14 and 15 were kind of.
Well, 14 and 15 are the same. So.
Yeah, like
14
this
is the
1 through 18.
14 was a follow up.
It's an addendum.
The addendum is missing
here, and Jay prepared it. And I could just say that.
I think he was trying to broaden his proposal.
Yeah.
I think so. That's right. And the Carborough Plaza is referenced in the existing Northern Study Area plan as a place for the town to focus some effort, support for redevelopment. It was a recommendation that was included in the plan after the community forum that was held, for the facilitation of that plan.
Then, so my question would be, for our purposes here, are we looking at Carborough Plaza and the area along 54 there as NSA?
No,
it's not a part of
it. It's not
right.
a part
and
of
it's
the NSA.
Part, and it's in part of the watershed, so there's not much that can be, and nor should be done to that part of the area.
I'd like to follow up on Randy's comment. This is big, and it has a whole lot of pieces, and I think it may be best if we figured out a way to break it into some chunks, like Randy was saying, get some public comment on those chunks, and kind of work our way through this, because different pieces set off buttons for different ones of us and for different members of the public, and so trying to discuss the whole thing, we're just each kind of taking turns on, but I want to talk about color red now. Well, no, I want to talk about I want to talk about trees, and you know, we've just got to focus.
So are you suggesting we structure the meeting when it comes back that maybe there's like the agenda is broken up into segments, questions, recommendations 1 through 3 first, then 4 through 6, or however.
Or maybe we not even try to tackle it all in the same meeting, because there's
right.
a lot of stuff here. I think that's what Ray is talking about, that we need to, like, break it into several pieces.
I mean, for example, when I read through this, I started to filter it in terms of, you know, for example, you know, the first number one is all about, well, the perception of places that are available. Well, if we look at a map and if we have a, you know, let's say meeting one, we talked about the places are available, the places that the committee recommended that are available, and what's the perception out there of any other potential places. Then I think that the question of, you know, form-based codes, I think that in itself is one chunk.
That's a biggie, and I
think that it's important for folks to understand. I mean, those of us who work with the planning board and the environmental advisory board, we have one set of working knowledges of what that is, and just getting folks on board with what the language is and what it means. Because as Trish, gave a truly a landscape of it when she responded to Jackie's question. You know, I was thinking, well, you know, that might be the kind of thing to have, you know, a couple of PowerPoint slides so that the viewing audience can see that Hamletization of, you know, how it looks. You know, it's one thing to say, well, think of the Century Center moving out from the Century Center. It's another thing of showing it and showing how we have it. So that might be a chunk unto itself.
But I guess the question then is do we want to replicate the existing Carver, or is there ever going to be anything different?
That's right. That's
I mean,
the question.
That
of course,
really
the existing
question.
Carver is going to be different. That's
well,
right.
I mean.
Sure will.
That's right. We're unreplicating things.
We're unreplicating it.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's the question. I mean, right. Sort of the other thing that I noticed in this report, and I'll just say this, and people can respond later in time or email me and everything. There's, because I actually am reading my emails this year. There seems to me to be no particular any indication about connectivity as to neighborhoods with regards to existing neighborhoods in terms if there want to be any connections by either Greenway. And I say this because when we talk about people who are on Rogers Road, and I actually walked the neighborhoods during the campaign, you've got to go in one, you can walk all the way through one and walk out. And there's not even any connectivity between our side of Rogers Road and the rest of Carver in terms of even walkways or greenways there. And there's this, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, there's this, the example I give about walkways and greenways when people compare Compton to other parts of L.A. And so I don't want us to create a situation where we're talking about greenways in one place and we're not talking about connectivity. And I'm not talking this time about roads, but I'm talking about bike paths and walkways, so that if you decided from Rogers Road you wanted to actually walk to whatever the name, the first people's name of that Twin Creeks Park is, you couldn't do it now. You'd have to walk on Eubanks Road, which we all know is unsafe, and you shouldn't walk on that road. So I think that should be included in any plan
mm-hmm.
that we're discussing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think some of that was just if very briefly. I think some of that was discussed by the committee. It's true. I don't think this report addresses it, but I think it was anyway.
It was.
That's consistent with some of the things discussed in the committee for sure.
My suggestion is, if we are going to break this down, which I think does make sense, that given that we no longer have a moratorium in place, nor are likely to have one, that we really ought to deal with the issues regarding zoning first, so that if we're going to make zoning changes, that we get those in place.
Okay.
And I don't know if subsequent to that, the sequence matters, although I think maybe the next piece to bite off might be the environmental items, just because there's so much agreement on those that we can go ahead and say, hey, we agree on these, you know, let's go ahead and get the language written up. And then after that, get into looking at actually changing the land use ordinance other than zoning in regard to those pretty specific tracts, whether it's form-based or how the VMU is going to work otherwise.
So let me make sure I understand you correctly. So would we be making, would we be talking about number one and making any decisions on our number one, or is it anticipated that we talk about the way that you've separated it, one, two, three, and then we make decisions? Or
no, I'm suggesting anything to do with zoning would be a first.
Well, but in other words, at the end of the zoning
hearing, what is
the
expectation?
A decision about that, or will we wait until the end of all three hearings?
No, I think we make a decision at the end of the zoning, or, you know,
at each stage.
What we need to do to make a decision about zoning, because I think that ought to be a priority, because, you know, if we're looking at a specific tract and it takes us a year to get a form-based ordinance in place and we haven't rezoned yet, you know, that tract
would
be
going. So one of the three would be zoning, which includes VMU, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to anchor the VMU.
And do that first.
Out of nowhere.
So we'd be anchoring the VMUs and looking at the zoning issues first, right?
Right.
And would that include Lydia's proposal about when we look at number one to identify other tracts that may be appropriate?
Certainly consider that.
And also Mark's proposal, I think.
And also looking at the left side if there's that other appropriate spot.
Right. In other words, what's on the list?
We could certainly. It would be. Definitely be educational to review. I think we have a PowerPoint presentation that staff prepared 10 months ago for the committee that we could incorporate into that discussion, so you can see what kind of thinking went into identifying these three and draw a different conclusion if you like.
Well, that would be helpful, because I may draw a different conclusion.
Those three and any others that are...
Right.
I just wanted to kind of, in terms of expectations, you know, even rezoning these tracts is not going to be as straightforward as rezoning might be otherwise, just because they are part of the Northern Study Area Plan and part of the Joint Planning Agreement, consequently. So
some of the changes would have to be approved by the county commissioners in some cases?
Well, some of the changes will need to be reviewed, approved by the town council in Chapel Hill as part of a joint planning agreement amendment and perhaps a plan amendment as well, since the plan was adopted by all three parties with regard to these areas. And, you know, these tracts are all outside the city limits, so.
But voluntary annexation trumps that, does it not? Yeah,
that,
or nay?
That does happen. It does do that. That's absolutely
it
true.
Could, yeah.
That's why I said voluntary.
Voluntary, yes.
Anyway.
Is that true for one of these sites is just south of Homestead Road, but still outside the
it's within the northern study area, so it is not in our jurisdiction. It's not in the town limits, so.
Right. Okay.
It just adds, I mean, you know, there is a schedule for when the joint planning public hearings are held.
We hold those quarterly or something.
So it just would mean, in terms of expectations, there would be a step involved in rezoning these tracts. We do not have we have a village mixed-use zone that's a floating zone. We'd have to redefine it to be a non-floating zone, and we'd also have, if there's going to be some alternative zone, we'd have to just, you know, create it, amend the ordinance to create it. But there is a step involving amending the joint plan.
I think, for rezoning I suspect that the other thing about it is that I believe we're at a point where there's pretty uniform agreement among the members of this board that our expectation would be that our village mixed use zone would in the future compel a commercial component, that in other words, a commercial component would not be optional, and that would also be, I think, a change in the ordinance,
because
right now it's not compulsory.
Exactly, this was an issue, but I won't tell you how I'm still mad about it.
Yeah,
but people know that.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, going back to what you were, help me out though just a little bit, because you identified it as sort of zoning issues, the environmental items, and then you said sort of other, but I'm not sure what the other, what kind of things fall
into. Well, I think there have been there are, I guess, some design items to do with the BMU that are in here. And
well, another for me would be
sort of miscellaneous.
Transportation.
Transportation. Yeah. Connectivity with the entire entire northern transition area, not just some parts of the northern transition area. Because if we don't put it down, it won't happen.
Right.
Okay, well, so let me suggest that we're going to break it apart into three general subject headings: zoning, environmental, the environmental items, and then form, transportation, et cetera.
Right, and whatever's left.
Well, form and transportation are two different things, though.
Oh, I realize that, but I'm proposing we would talk about them.
Form and transportation slash connectivity. Just so we're making sure we're
transportation,
getting soft transportation in there as well.
Right.
Sure. That's fine. Form, transportation, connectivity, and I'm going to put et cetera because
it will be.
Because there will be some et cetera.
And, you know, I hate to bring this up because it's a big ticket item, but the other thing that we need to think about when we think about this zoning and stuff is, are we going to have any more in the northern transition area, any more public buildings? And we might as well talk about it now rather than later. Because it takes you about 10 years to get one off the ground.
What else do you mean?
Like the town swimming pool.
Not even the town swimming pool, but if there's some other public, if there's some other public building, for example, library, or, you know, if we're going to make a deal with the middle school,
Gym.
Now's the time to discuss it, not when we need to have capital improvement projects. It takes a lot of time to think about how we're going to pay for something.
Mm-hmm.
And,
if we're going to pay for it, it's going to take a long time.
Right. And so I think you need to put it up front first, because what we now have is a lot of private recreation, not public recreation.
I think it's a good point,
yeah.
And it's kind of one of the things I was trying to touch on a little bit earlier. Is just what will our community needs be, and will we still have space for it when we get there?
And if you don't plan for it, you won't have space for it.
I never got to follow up on Mark's thing. Remember years ago when we were working on the green track? Remember that when you were across the street? Across the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we came to with the green track was that there was a large part of it that we weren't going to make any decision on, because we were going to leave it to like people down the road. We wanted to make sure we weren't being greedy and taking everything and zoning everything, so kind of leave stuff sort of open for future needs that we don't even know about. Was that kind
That's
of...
That's not what happened. Though.
That's not what happened.
That isn't what was decided on, but that was what you advocated for, Jackie, and honestly, it's part of what inspired my thinking about...
Because I remember you supporting that.
The west side of Oldie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll get to that.
We haven't paid for our share. Nobody's paid for our share, so it remains static as it is.
Green track, yes, it does. We're having a
meeting. We don't have to go there tonight. Yeah.
Well, I will just tell the board, I'm participating in some discussions later this week with the county in Chapel Hill about where that stands and when we might pay for it and that type of thing.
See, we met my goal anyway.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question is, what are the parameters of that? I mean, is it going to be we're going to have to pay, then we can do what we want to with the property or our share or our little percentage, or the county is going to do this? Because, you know, there was a different discussion about what should be put on that property. And, you know, my view is there's a dearth of positive public assets out there.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, there needs to be an increase in a positive public asset.
Well, I think that's a little off topic here, but we're on it, so let's do it for just a second. But I think where things stand at this point is that it's anticipated there'll be a certain number of acres of affordable housing development that'll be at the end of Purefoy Road off of Rogers there, and that the rest of the site would be under some type of conservation easement at some point, and there would be like passive recreation type uses over most of the site, and that a good chunk of the site would be owned by the county will end up being owned by the county exclusively, like about, I think about 40% mm-hmm. or 35% of it would wind up being owned by the county exclusively, and the other 65% or whatever would be owned jointly by Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County. Now, that's basically...
To do what with?
Passive recreation, conservation, and a certain amount of affordable housing that's spelled out in the resolutions we passed.
Isn't there also an expectation that the area where the county is getting the field hurt now, that they're going to have active recreation there once the landfill closes?
That's true, but that is not technically a part of the green track.
Right, but it's sort of connected.
It is very much connected.
Joel's question about
That is the desire, but then you're talking about probably on the order of like 10 years from now. That's a so-called no. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Y'all need to be talking about
that's
it
right.
now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not later.
Although... It may be your swimming pool by the time they finish excavating all that dirt out of there, but anyway.
Well, yeah, that too. But I'm just saying that, well, I'll speak to you about that. I'll send you an email.
Can I go back to something? Joel had mentioned connectivity through Greenway and making sure that Greenway is not just through, certain areas that are contiguous to...
Not through just new developments. Or
right, or contiguous to the Bolin up in that area. So would you like to see that as part of the transportation connectivity part or environment?
I would.
Okay,
I'm assuming it's part of the
transportation. I'm just clarifying because when staff's trying to lay this stuff out...
Yeah, and that's coming from item number 8 from the committee, kind of talk, because they have an item here about working with the Greenways Commission to create it publicly accessible.
Right, although that's certainly, Joel was getting at some
that's, right,
much
that's
more
not,
specific points about that.
Right.
But yeah.
And also, excuse me, also transportation more broadly, not just Greenways, but this
number,
one.
Number 13 would also
right.
fall
that
into this category.
That goes back to Mark's comments about...
And they did have under number 9... it's about stream protection, but there is a sub-item there, updating the connector road policy to include balancing analysis of net environmental impact and considering among other. We would probably pull that one and put it with the discussion of trans, because they were proposing that amounts and types of land disturbed and distances traveled, carbon consumed, and so and other environmental benefits of connectivity would be looked at.
I think I have a sense of. I think we have a pretty good sense of how we're going to proceed on this. Can mm-hmm. I? I'm almost afraid to suggest this, but can I suggest that the board give a sense of on what kind of time frame the board is hoping to have these three sets of discussions?
Within the next 6 months.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, I would think we start with the first one as soon as we can and then go to the next.
I guess all I'm saying is we have lots of items that are slated to be discussed by the board. So, I think giving the staff some direction about the level of priority. I mean, between now and the time we go on our summer break, to have had all three of these discussions.
Well, then you got to put in the budget.
I know. That's why I'm asking the question.
I think we should have the VMU definitely before break. The other two, it would be really great, but I'd rather have live staff.
Yeah. Okay, so there might be the expectation that, for example, the third subject might be, like September,
over.
October
right.
time
yeah.
frame.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we need a motion on any of that?
Yeah, it's probably a good idea.
Okay, move the schedule as discussed.
Probably something a little more specific than that would be helpful.
Why don't we ask staff if they could come back to us at our next meeting with a proposed schedule to see where they can fit
right.
it in. Right, in terms of what they see.
It might be good to have a written resolution that
right.
we adopted,
yeah.
giving direction.
I think we'd appreciate that because we hadn't, know quite what to anticipate. But
surprise,
I don't think anticipated it would be quite like this. I would like it. Chance for us to chat.
Yeah, so why don't we?
Okay.
Why don't you digest?
Well, so let's refer the comments about the way to proceed to the staff, and we'll look for a resolution shortly from the staff, a proposed resolution shortly from the staff establishing a schedule for consideration.
All right.
I would like to make a motion before we move on.
Okay.
If you all are agreeable, which is that we thank the NACER PERC members for their service and encourage them to participate as individuals in the upcoming discussions and dissolve that committee.
I'll second that.
All right. That has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Thank you very much, you all. Does the board want to discuss item three on this agenda?
No.
Why don't we do
but
it
this
in,
time
in or March so we can go home and watch the end of the ball?
Yeah. Well, that's not the game.
It's the what? It's a Nelson line?
I'm going to watch the election.
How are we ever going to get any work done in 08? We can come back to
with
it.
With a basketball know. Team this good, how are you going to get any work done?
Period. 41-33 with 17-12 to go.
Yeah.
That's why. So, well, that's why.
So which was Obama?
33.
All right. Look, board members, what's your pleasure? You want to defer item three to March?
Yeah, and I'll move the latter date.
April 28th.
April 28th for our meeting with the legislative committee.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We schedule April 28th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. We are
moved to adjourn.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.